President Obama is expected, in fact, scheduled to make a speech about the departure of Egyptian President Hosni Mubarak later today. Joining us now outside the White House is David Sanger, chief Washington correspondent for the New York Times. Hello, David. Ooh, David, we have a rough connection here. We're going to try to get you back, or maybe you can move to a better location.
I'm moving to a better spot.
Oh, that's better. That's great. So do we have any sense of the mood in the White House at the moment?
Well, you know, they've been busy preparing for the president's talk, which we hear is going to be around 3 p.m. And I think at this point they feel as if they've sort of ducked a bullet, because there was a lot of concern last night that today could be a very violent day in Cairo, that the reaction to President Mubarak's very muddled speech last night was likely to prompt a huge reaction. And one of the mysteries we're still trying to solve is whether or not President Mubarak had agreed yesterday to step aside, but simply couldn't utter the words in that speech, or whether after the speech it became clear that he had made a bad situation so much worse that either the army or some other elements or some other nations helped step in to prompt this morning's events.
Well, last night, President Obama chided Mubarak for not seizing an opportunity to move toward democracy, but he didn't call for Mubarak to step down immediately.
In fact, in that statement, he never even mentioned Mubarak's name. And that tells you something about what the strategy had been in the past week. After the president got out a week ago today, on Tuesday, following an earlier speech that President Mubarak had given, the White House came to a conclusion that Mubarak might not step aside at all. And so their strategy turned to be one of trying to strip away his associates one by one and make it clear that he was isolated. So you didn't hear President Obama go and call him. You didn't hear many administration officials talk about it. In fact, they concentrated on people like Vice President Suleiman, and most particularly on the defense chief, who had several conversations with Secretary of Defense Robert Gates, and then on Friday went out into the crowd and sort of associated himself with the demonstrators. And so their strategy was to try to make Mubarak feel so isolated that he felt that he would either no longer have much power or would give up.
I spoke earlier in this hour with Al Jazeera White House correspondent Patty Culhane, who said that the location of the speech has been moved to the White House foyer. Why that change in location?
Well, I think it gives a little bit more of a sense of the gravity of the moment. It's also where the president gave one of his earlier speeches on this subject matter. And so I think as a result, that conveys more of a sense of the president speaking in a grand place than the White House press room, which, as you know, is small, cramped, and has some of the world's worst vending machines.
On the other hand, it allows reporters to ask questions, and Patty suggested that by moving it, he was cutting down on that opportunity.
Yeah, there's been no indication he's going to take any questions. And, you know, we have a lot of questions right now, and the first one is, did the president's strategy work, or did he just get lucky? In other words, how much influence did the United States have in this decision? And there's no particular evidence that the U.S. had very much. Now, the big issue is, what kind of influence does the U.S. have going forward? The country is now going to be run, if you believe Vice President Suleiman's statement this morning, by a council of military officials. Those officials, of course, are highly attuned to the fact that the U.S. is their biggest supplier of arms, and about $1.3 billion in aid each year. And the question is, how much control will the U.S. have in making sure that those officials, while I'm sure they'll be protecting their own interests, also put together elections fairly quickly and do a credible rewriting of the Constitution? The President Mubarak appointed a commission to rewrite the Constitution not long ago, just a few days ago, but it was filled with his cronies.
Well, when protests began in Egypt, Secretary of State Hillary Clinton said that the Mubarak government was stable and looking for ways to respond to the legitimate needs and interests of the Egyptian people. And then the other day, Vice President Biden declared that Mr. Mubarak was not a dictator. I'm assuming those words may come back to haunt him. But do they suggest a complicated balancing act that was going on in the administration?
An enormous balancing act going on in the administration, and I suspect a fair bit of internal tension from the early evidence we've gotten about how to portray this. And the tension was this. On the one hand, President Obama, especially given the speech that he gave in Cairo in 2009, you know, wanted to be here on the right side of history with these inspiring protesters in the streets, with a group of young people trying to take back their country. On the other hand, they were getting constant phone calls from their allies, not only the Israelis, but also the Saudis, all of the other Arab states, who are calling in to say, hey, don't embrace a revolution until you know how it's going to turn out. And, of course, they all reminded the White House, as if any reminding was necessary, that 32 years ago the Iranian revolution started off, seemed to be a coalition of Islamic forces and outside professionals, and it soon got hijacked by the Islamic forces. And for 30 years, we've been living with the consequences of that. And the nightmare that would have created, not only for the Israelis, but for the other neighbors, was considerable.
But this isn't being called an Islamist revolution, if anything, a middle-class secular revolution. But we've
But
there is also a lot of anger on the American right. I just heard John Bolton, the former a representative to the UN during the Bush years, say that this is not in the interests of the United States or Israel. Others have said, well, Mr. Bolton, should the Egyptian people be worried about what's in the best interest of the United States or Israel? But also people on Fox News and elsewhere have been very critical of Obama for not just coming out in total support of Mubarak.
That's right. And you've seen this fascinating split on the right. Between those who had worked for President Bush and actually supported his freedom agenda, which would have encouraged people to do these kinds of uprisings, and another group, some of them neocons, but not all, some of them on the far right of the Bush administration, including Vice President Cheney, who said yesterday that President Obama should have stuck with a longtime ally. And so this is, it's a fascinating division, and I think it's even stronger on the right than it is on the left. Now, I think President Obama is also lucky this didn't go on much longer, because there was the risk, which many in the White House warned about, that if the president didn't come out and fully embrace the protesters by calling for Mubarak to leave, then he could have alienated this generation of young Egyptians. Because this all ended in 18 days, I suspect that there probably isn't that much lasting damage. That what people will remember a year from now is that there was a short revolution and that Mubarak was ousted.
Should we be concerned about what's happening in the intelligence community? CIA Director Leon Panetta announced yesterday that Mubarak was probably stepping down by midnight. And, of course, then he said the exact opposite last night. How does the CIA get something like that so wrong?
Probably by listening to too much CNN and other network news. I mean, there's no indication that we've had so far that Director Panetta, who was speaking, he was testifying in Congress while this was all taking place, was probably being fed the headlines. Not exactly what one wants to hear coming out necessarily out of the mouth of intelligence officials, where we would assume that they would get their information in some other way. But the more discussions I've had at the White House, the more it's become clear to me that most of yesterday, they were as much in the dark as the rest of us were. They were hearing and getting signals that President Mubarak would step aside or at least transfer his powers. And when they watched the speech, they were as stunned as everybody else. And what that may tell you is that we weren't as deeply inside that government as many had hoped, and the lines of communication weren't terribly good. It could also be that Mubarak simply didn't give the speech that his own people expected.
Now, writing in his blog earlier today, your colleague at the New York Times, Nicholas Kristof, wrote that the game isn't over, and I'm quoting, "I worry that senior generals may want to keep a Mubarak-style government without Mubarak. In essence, the regime may have decided that Mubarak had become a liability and thrown him overboard without any intention of instituting the kind of broad, meaningful democracy that the public wants."
I think Nick's caution is entirely understandable and correct. And to some degree, it echoes what you heard Secretary of State Clinton say last weekend when she said, you know, revolutions have a way of getting hijacked. And I think that Nick is essentially making the same point here, which is just because a government is deposed by popular will doesn't mean that the government that follows is the one that that same populace had in mind. And we simply don't know how this is going to play out. So all the hard part for American influence, as I suggested before, may just be starting now, because they now have to convince this military council to proceed with those reforms very rapidly, and perhaps without the pressure of people being on the streets.
Well, David, we're out of time, but I'm assuming that the departure of Mubarak means that our entire foreign policy in the Middle East will be different from here on out. The Israeli-Palestinian peace process, the use of Egypt as a stalwart against Iranian influence, and pretty much everything else.
I'm assuming that you're absolutely right on that, and I suspect that everything we thought we knew and understood about the dynamics of the Middle East for the first 2 years of the Obama administration is now up for serious questioning.
And we're going to have to deal with Omar Suleiman, who used to be called the CIA's man in Cairo. David Sanger is our man in Washington.
We may not. We don't really know his role right now.
David, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you.